I'd like to begin this talk reading what some scholars believe is the earliest description of a first-person account of the Buddhist description of his awakening. It's very simple. It's in some ways a very ordinary or humanistic, in that it's just something very simple that human beings, nothing's very unusual in the description. So maybe we can use that as a basis for what I'm going to teach today. And so it comes from the Book of Eights. And it's very touching for me this description, because it talks about how the Buddha felt before his awakening, in seeing the difficulties of the world, the emotions he had, what that was like for him. Violence gives birth to fear. Just look at people and their quarrels. I will speak of my dismay and the way that I was shaken. Seeing people thrashing about like fish in little water, and seeing them feuding with each other, I became afraid. The world is completely without a core. Everywhere, things are changing. I felt discontent at seeing only conflict to the very end. Then I saw an arrow here, hard to see, embedded in the heart. Pierced by this arrow, people dash about in all directions. When the arrow is pulled out, they don't run and they don't sink. So here the Buddha talks about being afraid, being shaken, feeling discontent at what he was seeing in the world. And then he saw that it's a very important thing, kind of the key thing that he saw, that all of Buddhism flows from this understanding. He saw embedded in the heart is an arrow. An arrow here is a foreign object embedded in the heart. And then he pulled it out. When the arrow is pulled out, people don't run around and they don't sink and collapse. And then is that this is a poem, ancient poem. The poem goes on. At some point, it says, not deviating from truth, the truth of this arrow and pulling out the arrow, not deviating from this truth, sages stand on dry ground, giving up everything. They are said to be at peace. Standing on dry ground. To stand, sit still, stand still, and gaze upon your suffering is to stand on dry ground and not be swept away in the floods, the currents and the waves and the whirlpools of how people quarrel, fight, how we struggle, how we suffer. So this ability to stand back and kind of stand, understand in a nice way and gaze upon all this without being caught in it. I'm offering for this retreat is the beginning of finding our peace. The poem goes on. What came before? Let it pass away. What will come later? Do nothing about it. And don't grasp. And if you don't grasp at what's in between the past and the future, you'll live at peace. Here we see twice in this poem, the Buddha is holding up peace as a possibility when we pull out the arrow. And peace is kind of ordinary. It comes with no promise of great cosmic understanding about the nature of the universe. The purpose of life. But it does mean that there's no more agitation. For one who knows, who has no agitation, there is no karmic accumulation. Abstaining from karmic activity, one sees safety everywhere. So to see safety everywhere when there's no more karmic activity. So a few things about this ancient poem that I was deeply touched when I first read it. And I was touched because of how I felt, you know, that deep within me was a concern, a care for the suffering of the world. And it's tragic, it's how much suffering there is in this world. And how human the Buddha was. We often hold up the Buddha as being this paradigm of great wisdom, and even before he was awakened, he was already supposed to be kind of like super special person. But it kind of this brings the Buddha to us. And how it can be for us to look at this world and the challenges of this world. And the possibility of touching into peace, possibility of taking out the source of our suffering that's embedded in our heart. The idea of touching the heart, caring for the heart, for our own heart and the heart of others, I think is one of the great sacred activities of human life. It's a beautiful thing to have a sense that we're caring for our hearts, and either directly or indirectly, caring for the hearts of others. I think this work we're doing on this retreat is sacred work, because where else do we find that which is most precious, most valuable for humans than freedom from suffering, having a heart that knows an abiding deep sense of peace. And then finding safety everywhere. When there's no more karmic activity, karmic accumulation. A very common karmic activity is to try to change the world so that we can be at peace, so that we can be happy, so we can be safe. And if the world has to change so you can be safe, you'll have a job for the rest of your life. Because the world changes on a whim. You can't really count on reality being, remaining what you carefully constructed and made up. And so if you're constantly trying to make the world and the people around you behave in the right way so that you feel safe, it's a lot of work. But if you avoid the world so you can be safe, then you're not really safe. You're not safe from yourself then. Because I think that not dealing, not understanding and coming to some kind of terms with our own karmic activity, karmic history, leaves us, leaves this arrow embedded in the heart. And one way of understanding this whole path of practice is a path of increasing our capacity to feel safe wherever we go. Seeing safety everywhere because we bring it with us. And so this beginning, as we started this retreat, the idea of a new way of looking at suffering, standing on dry ground, in a sense, Dharma, dry Dharma ground, and being able to just see it very simply without adding complications, without getting entangled with our suffering and identifying with it. Then the suffering, maybe the terrible suffering that we experience in our lives, we become a little, it becomes safer to feel it, safer from our own reactivity. And we are beginning our capacity to be, feel safety, to capacity to hold, to be present for, and not be troubled by what we see. As we start seeing more deeply how much we're attached and caught and reactive, not just seeing the suffering, but underneath it, then we're beginning to learn the capacity to hold that and not let that get the upper hand, not get to have that push us around. And we attain a certain kind of safety, more safety from ourselves. And so it goes as we go down these steps of dependent arising. When we see how we construct the movement to become, how it starts. And we learn how to stand on dry ground and just see that, be still and watch and see. We're also developing another capacity for safety. And then we start seeing more deeply the fuel for our becoming, the fuel for how we react and respond. We see the underlying basis that mood, attitudes that bring forth. And we can see it peacefully, calmly, just see it without blame or criticism or shame. Just see. We increase our capacity for safety. And some of this extends out when we're outside in the world and people do terrible things, say terrible things happen. But at least we're safe from ourselves, because we know how to be with and not react and not get caught in our own inner reactions. And at some point we come down to the deep roots inside, deep kind of core inside, maybe of the heart, the arrow in the heart. And one way of understanding it is a kind of core agitation, a core restlessness, where the unsteadiness, the wobbliness, the fragility of this agitation is kind of one of the primary beginning points, or the primary beginning point for the kind of karmic activity that leads to suffering. And not all karmic activity leads to suffering, but that's the dependent arising. That's what it's a description of suffering, and it's the conditions that lead up to it. So that's what we're talking about on this side of the list. But what's interesting is that important to take into account that when we do so-called good karma, or the literal language sometimes is beautiful karma, we do beautiful things, that if this core agitation is there behind it, then the impact, the consequence of even good karma can be some good. It's a good conditioning and supports it going in a nice direction. But the agitation that comes along with it also has an impact. And so to now learn to recognize and be with this deeper, deeper agitation, so we become simpler and simpler as we sit and watch. And this agitation that's now the next step of dependent arising has the name of tanha in Pali, meaning thirst. Sometimes, rather than calling it literally thirst, it's translated, interpretive translation, as craving. But I like associating with agitation, because you might, if you have craving, you might want to try to understand what you have craving for. And to just simply watch it and be very simple with it and not make it a problem. Just calling it agitation. Then you don't have to kind of be looking what it is about. It's just agitation. Or if it's easy enough to do it, it's just craving. It's just thirst. And I think of this as what it's for, the thirsting. It's not so important what it's for, because it's just this thirst, almost drive, is almost its own thing, living inside of us, almost like looking for something to thirst for. It's just kind of this momentum of agitation, that looking for something to calm or bring peace to the agitation by, again, getting something in the world just right. The tradition says there are three kinds of thirst, these deep drives. One of them is for pleasure and comfort. It's an interesting exercise to appreciate how amazingly deep the human drive is for comfort and pleasure. It's kind of humbling how much it's part of human life. And the other is the thirst to be. Just the thirst to exist. And then the thirst to not exist. So it takes an ability to sit, to be very still inside with awareness. For the awareness to be still, steady, stable. It's not easy to come to. We have to always start where we're at. But it's the same practice all along. Calm, steady, seeing, being aware of, being with, whatever is happening. But as we get simpler and simpler, at some point, it's enough just to recognize this is craving or thirsting, or maybe even this is agitation. Without making it any more complicated. It doesn't have to be my thirsting, like, oh, this is a personal failure and I'm a bad person that I'm doing what all human beings since the beginning of human history have done. And, you know, so I'm the one person who should be condemned because I have craving when every single person before you has had it. It just comes with a territory. It comes with these hearts. It comes with how we, you know, being a human being. But even though it comes with it, in Buddhism, it's understood to be a visitor, something foreign that doesn't have to remain there. But so to not take it personally, not to make a story about it, not to judge oneself for it, make an identity from it. All that's, you know, it's slowed down, quieted down as we settle in. Just sitting here with it and then recognizing agitation. At times that's the most difficult one to sit with because the agitation, the restlessness can be quite compelling to run away, to do something, to not just be with it. And it's an important topic because at the root of the painful karmic stream that we can be involved in, according to the Buddha at least, at all the painful karmic streams have its root or rooted in craving. And craving by itself, in and of itself, is also suffering. And we're learning once again to stand our ground, stand on dry ground, Dharma ground, and simply observe and see. But at some point, as we do this process, someday, beginning to really appreciate how wonderful it is to just be aware at this deep level. And that in that awareness, there starts to be non-agitation. So when we can really see the agitation of craving, then look around and see, is there any tranquility? Sometimes we're so enamored with the sufferings of our life, we don't notice everything else around it. But as practice deepens, there's the Dharma stream that's following along. And to be able to recognize the Dharma stream in as we go through these steps of dependent arising is very helpful. And then you line up these two streams together, then the corresponding step in liberative dependent arising is tranquility. Tranquility, peace, contentment, deep abiding satisfaction, ease, serenity. And in this liberative dependent arising, that one of the conditions for this tranquility is joy, a certain kind of pleasure and delight, gladness. And this is, I think, appreciate. This is also points out that you can't make yourself tranquil. But we put the conditions in place to support it. And it starts with the ability to sit and observe suffering calmly, developing, and from that, having faith or enthusiasm, this can be done. This is worth doing. And then being kind of having some gladness and delight. Wow, I have this path that I can follow. This is a great path. I don't have to keep becoming. I don't have to keep making myself up. I have this practice to do. Step by step. Little step after little step. It gives life a sense of purpose, a direction. This is good. It can feel really nice to have this purpose and direction in the middle of the chaos of life. This gives some order, some place to go, and some place to stand. And then to really start engaging in the practice and perhaps starting the process, continuing the process of becoming simpler. Simpler in the sense of less and less of the karmic complications that we live by most of the time. Maybe feeling some happiness and joy around that. This is wonderful. Maybe there starts being a feeling that can be expressed, a very good feeling, a bright feeling, a light feeling that can be expressed maybe it has to do with the tone of voice, how it's said, but can be said by just having a wonderful, uplifting expression that of yes, yes, I'm on the path. Yes, here I am. Yes, this is good to practice, to be aware. Yes, I'm not. I am with difficulties, but yes, this is good to be aware and present. And some occasionally we get some good, positive feedback from practice, and it's not just all about looking at suffering. At times we get settled, and there is a welling up of sense of well-being. And then you can say yes to that. And with a sense of well-being beginning to show itself, it's the well-being that's a condition for a natural settling down of the heart, easing up, feeling of safety, safe from ourselves in some deep way. And so something can rest. For many of us, maybe the heart's deepest wish is to rest. And so this tranquility comes as we practice. And it corresponds to the other list with craving, the agitation of craving. And what a great thing to meet agitation with tranquility, or to recognize tranquility is there together with agitation. That the constant feeling of dissatisfaction of craving, right there with together with it, next to it, can find no dissatisfaction, but rather some deep satisfaction of being at rest, being at ease, being tranquil. But not that kind of tranquility that becomes complacency, the kind of tranquility that we somehow tell ourselves, I have it made now. I'll just, become a couch potato in my meditative tranquility. But a tranquility that supports a continued step-by-step practice of clear seeing, a tranquility that supports and maybe even inspires continued calm, gentle awareness of what is, so that maybe our agitation that we have, that thirsting that we have, this deep human drive to exist, for example, to be, maybe connected to the fear of death at times, that maybe we can hold that calmly and gently, like that palm that holds the tight fist, appreciating that we're touching something sacred within. Now we're really touching how valuable we are and how important this is, and something that's very tender and deep and essential to who we are. And not give in to the agitation, to run away or get busy or give up or start another dharmic project. Because, you could always pick up a new technique, get busy so you don't have to face it and be with it. But it's, we're such important human beings. Each of us is tremendously valuable. Each of us is precious. And there's all this beauty and wonderfulness and this life that we are. And to be able to get down to the root and tend to it, care for it with care, kindness, gentleness, calmness, And to stand, but to do it standing on the dry ground, standing on the Dharma ground. So, and really honestly, clearly seeing and holding what's there. And then it's easy to get so easy in this restlessness, agitation, and this drive to want to subtly or not so subtly practice seeing of agitation, seeing of thirst, seeing of suffering. Thinking that I have to get rid of it. It has to go away. And the focus of attention is on the agitation. Like that's the subject I have to kind of really deal with. And that turns out to be more of this becoming, more of this attachment, more of this karmic activity to give so much importance to it. But instead, we are giving care and calm attention to it. But it turns out it's the calm attention we're giving it that's the important thing. The calm attention needs something to pay attention to. And what better thing than the arrow embedded in our hearts? What better thing than to get down to where the root of it all is? But the important thing is not the suffering, believe it or not. The important thing is the attention that holds it. And if that attention can be tranquil and calm, then we're setting the stage, the conditions for going further in the liberative dependent arising sequence. Which, believe it or not, is happiness. Imagine being still, looking upon your suffering kindly and beginning to feel inklings of happiness. So what we're doing on this retreat is sacred work, sacred activity. And it's one of the great activities in life to do. Please be very careful with yourself. Very careful about who's in charge, so that your agitation is not in charge of you. Craving is not in charge of you. It would be nice if you can be in charge of yourself. Standing on dry ground, observing, watching, being able to offer one of the great things to offer. Calm, gentle attention. Be still and gaze upon all things kindly. May you find tranquility in this next day of practice. And let that guide you, support you, in staying close and intimate with your moment-to-moment experience, not as work, but as a homecoming, staying home here where it's safe, quiet, and maybe a place to be contented. May whatever degree of tranquility you recognize, may it support the continuity of your practice, moment by moment, and all the activities of the day. Thank you very much for your practice.